Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Oh, it's hard. It's really difficult. It's hard to look back on my life 5 days ago and make sense of it all. That's why my good friends, content creator Keane Toomey and Martin Worthington from the Department of Near and Middle Eastern Studies at TCD, it's a big title, are here to help in
Jen's Friends.
Just Friends.
It's basically a time where I don't have to do much and I drag people into the studio to do all my work for me. Good morning, lads. How are you?
Good morning. Very good. Thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Martin, how are you?
Hello and thank you so much for having us.
It's great to have you off a Friday. Now, we've lots to get through because there was lots of things happening this week that got people talking on the text machine and calling in and various things went off the charts, okay? The one thing that got people talking is going to work with your parents. Okay, so let's talk about this because yesterday we spoke about those awkward times when your parents bring you to work. You know, it can be awkward being dragged around O'Connell Street when your mom's trying to sell ad spaces to bars and restaurants. Keane, your dad has his own business, so that must have happened a lot to you.
Oh God! Oh, when I was younger, yeah, it was just an ordeal of traveling. And my father, he was a printer.
Okay.
So, but he also was kind of a sales rep for printing. So he'd go around like he'd travel a lot of Munster and be like, oh, my printing is very good. Would you like to use it? And sure, I was always the prop and I was that little kid that had to look cute and work.
Please buy daddy's printer.
Yeah, could you please buy my dad's business cards? He needs them. And then my mother, she got me a job in an aluminium extrusion plant.
Oh.
It's a long word, I know.
So she actually hired you?
She worked in the offices and then I desperately needed a job. It was my only job until I started making videos for a living. And
what did you have to do?
I actually don't even know what I was doing. I was there for like three years. I had to put this like weird tar stuff inside a window. I was very good at it. I was the only Irish fella there, so I had to pick up a lot of Polish. I'm after forgetting all of it, but I can count to four in Polish now.
Go on.
Jeden, dwa, trzy, cztery. That's it.
That'll stand to you. That absolutely will. Martin, what are your memories of being dumped in your parents' workplaces as a kid, or did it happen?
Well, first of all, I love the fact that Kian actually turned into an economic asset for the family, you know, mobilising the force of this little kid as a heart-bleeding thing. No, I was a liability. I spent most of my childhood being confused, I think, and I was never more confused than on those rare occasions when my mum would take her into the office. She was an academic. And I'd just sit around with these unfamiliar lights and smells and dusty papers and just really not have a clue what was going on. But I was left to entertain myself and then I'd go home and continue the process.
Okay. Now, as someone in education, have you ever had to bring a student to a work event?
Well, let's see. There are a range of things that come up like that from time to time. And one of the best things about working with young people is the unpredictable things that can throw up, you know, in the forms of ideas in an essay or in human situations. And I was once in charge of a group of young people. And there was a particular individual who had a very difficult time. And a particularly difficult day arose. And so I was left with this predicament because I had this individual in front of me. And I knew that the support services available at the time weren't terribly strong. And I had to be in a play in 10 minutes' time. So I thought, right, what do I do? If I simply go to the play and leave this individual, the consequences could be disastrous. If I don't go to the play, I will be shot by the director of the play. So I grabbed the individual by the lapels and said, you're going to sit in the audience and be really bored while this play, which was actually in a foreign language, happens. And I'll keep an eye on you. And then afterwards, we'll sort it all out properly. And from time to time, I looked up, you know, in these darkened faces sitting up in the chairs was said individual. I think they were playing on their phone, which was great. It meant that nothing terrible had happened. And then the experience sort of, you know, retreated and everything was fine thereafter.
Good on you. God love that person having to sit through a play that was in a foreign language. I mean, that would make you, that's tough going. And they stayed for the whole thing?
Yes, whether they learnt to count to four in the language, like Kian, I couldn't say because I didn't ask them.
It's commendable, right?
Yeah, that is a talent. Listen, we need to talk about psychics and mediums because we actually heard from all sides of the debate when we talked about psychics on Tuesday, I think it was. Kian, where do you stand on whether there are people who can interpret things from beyond the world we know? Where do you stand on all of that?
I don't know. I'm sceptical, but I've never been to one. But my mother and her two sisters, they're like three witches. They're like something from Hocus Pocus. And they're very much they love going to, like, I'd say my mom's been to 20 plus mediums, and she goes like to these house calls, and she like there's times where she's like, they're definitely doing research on me now and all this stuff, and they're finding info, but she'd often use like different names. She'd go in, and there was this one time where this medium predicted, not predicted, sorry, he was able to tell my mother how my father passed away, and he got a bang on. He also said, your son, he's a funny fella, he's a bit popular. I'm imagining he's going to be moving out in the next month or two. And I didn't know that I was moving out. And he said, so he was like, I can see something like a long drive. And I moved, I don't live there anymore, so I can say where I lived. But it was called Longshore Drive. And I was like, that was very coincidental, wasn't it?
Coincidental,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but then my Aunt Linda, she went on stage with a medium. I won't say the name of the person, okay, because they're fairly known.
Okay.
But Linda heard answers being said to her in her ear on stage, and she was heartbroken because Linda was like, you know the way you were naming bands there
yeah.
earlier on the radio. Her thing is mediums, right?
Okay.
So it's not BTS. It's like the Long Island medium. That's who she's obsessed with. She'll go to her concerts.
That must
have
been heartbreaking for her. You know?
Yeah, I think it actually was. Like genuinely, she went pale. Like,
and did she still have a grow for them? Even though this person was a bit of a sham, would she still go, oh no, but there are people out there?
I think so. I don't know if she paints everyone with the same brush. I'm not sure how her medium judgment is, but
medium judgment. Martin, you're an academic. What do you make of all this? I have to go to you. What do you think?
Do you know, Jen, it's really funny because I had a really strong feeling that you were going to ask me about this topic of prescience and knowing things beforehand. It's extremely difficult. I think it's something we're all very confused about, and it's actually something that doesn't get much discussed and on which we don't have a lot of guidance available, right? So with religion, at least you can say, well, I see there's a man dressed up in fancy robes and he's got a big building and he says that God exists. So I kind of get why, you know, people say, well, then it must be true. And I know it's not that simple. I'm crudifying and I don't want to offend anybody. What I'm saying is that at least God has on his side a whole apparatus for belief and the transmission of belief and the nurturing of that belief. Ghosts don't, really, right? So this whole idea of are there ghosts, are there not? There's not some rich, powerful institution which is there to push for ghosts existing, but somehow, you know, they muddle along and they keep on surfacing in different cultures.
Yeah.
You know, Central America has the cult of the ancestors with a special dedicated day, and in Western Europe it's something we tend to lose sight of. Like Kian, actually, I've got family members who are very open to the idea and who will, you know, engage with relevant professionals, and there'll be meditation which kind of blurs into listening to distant voices. Personally, I'm utterly sceptical. But then again, I have to recognise that my scepticism is of that somewhat confused brand, which can vacillate from one moment to the other. You know, I don't really believe in God in any conventional sense, but catch me in particular times at particular moments in particular states of mind and I suddenly will.
Please God, may this Polish plague go well, I know all my life. Those kind of situations.
Yeah, that's more hoping rather than believing. But, you know, there's the famous sentence, which is, do you believe in ghosts? No, but I'm afraid of them. So I haven't gone to a psychic yet, but who knows if it may happen, you know, if the need arises. So
okay. And it's funny because when we're getting the texts into the show, they all started off with exactly what you said, Keane. Now, I'm a skeptic,
yeah.
But how do they know that I was living on a long drive? Or how do they know? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's more agnostic. It's like, show me and I'll believe you then, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But one thing I did get as well, they do provide great comfort to a lot of people. People who have friends and family who maybe have passed in their life, they find great comfort in going to see a medium, being told that they're watching over them and they're in the room and they had something to say to them. So if they provide comfort, as long as they're not distressing and rinsing you for 20 grand a year, I think on you go, whatever you're into. Poshness. There was a thing in the paper this week about how posh you are and how posh you think you are or you were. Martin, I have to start with you on this one. Do Irish people think you are posh because of your accent, would you say?
English people, I think I'm posh because of my accent. You know, it's a well-known fact that I sound like the Duke of Marlborough or something, and I'm not the Duke of Marlborough. I don't even know if there is a Duke of Marlborough. I'm just using that as a name. But it's kind of a problem. You know, if I go into a shop, especially in the north of England, which is where I was born, and I ask to buy a newspaper, I, you know, can get a funny stare sometimes. It's something that's very interesting. It doesn't carry across different languages. So English has this horrendous association between the way you speak and perceived class affiliation and income bracket and sorts of terrible things. But if you talk German or Italian or French or other languages I can badly mutter my way through, this doesn't really arise in the same way. So I think Ireland should divest itself of this appalling piece of English heritage and just stop talking about poshness altogether. It's a word that's very hard to define. You know, when you say someone's posh, what does it actually mean? Does it mean that they're rich? Does it mean that they think they're more important? Does it mean that you think that they think they're more important? It's a kind of, it's a bilateral relationship. It's all very unhealthy. Much easier just to stop talking about this and to take people for who they are and what they do rather than how they might sound.
Fair enough.
I won't be able to come up with a better answer. I was going to say, like, I think people are posh if they have hunky-dories instead of oakily-dokilies. That was my answer. Oh, my God.
I know what you mean. I think it was, for me, a little bit, the last bit of what you said. It's people who think other people are posh. People who think other people are posher than them. Anyway, people who had soda streams were posh to me. You know what I mean?
Soda streams.
Do you remember the soda stream?
Yeah, you can get them in the range, yeah. Oh, I look at them and I'm like, they look like an ordeal. Like, I'd rather just buy them pre-streamed.
But Martin, what would have seemed posh to you if we're going down this road when you were as a kid? Did you ever go, oh, that's
not
posh now?
So, no, fair enough. Although I reject the concept of poshness now, I wasn't always savvy enough to do that. So I think as a child, we used to spend our summers in a fairly working class area of York, and we played in the back lane, and Marks and Spencer's is something I would probably have classed as posh. We certainly didn't shop there. We shopped at the local Asda or whatever. And Marks and Spencer's, the way that family and friends talked about it, made it sound like this refined, sophisticated, expensive world that wasn't really for us. And that's a terrible idea. What we need is an open society where everything is open to everybody. But, you know, we're a long way off that.
Agree. Now, we need to talk about going the extra mile because we heard from texters and callers who risked their carbon footprint for love on Tuesday. Nobody could match Cormac's story of cycling 23 miles and actually failing to score. But Cian, how did you risk your career as a comic to try and get some sweet, sweet loving? Tell me about that.
I think you kind of made it sound a bit more dramatic than what it is, risking my career. Emily, my fiance, she's from Waterford, which is, well, at the beginning I thought was very far away, but it's only 120 kilometres. But I didn't have a car at the time, nor did I have any money at all. Like, I think when I met Emily, I had €3, genuinely, and that was borrowed from my friend just because I didn't buy a bottle of Pepsi or something. So I had to sell my GoPro camera, and it was my only camera, and I didn't really think it through because I was trying to make videos for a living. So it's almost as if like selling your steering wheel and you're a lorry driver. It's like, oh, how am I going to do this now?
I didn't
really do it, but it did work out because now I'm still with Emily and I'm still doing this as a video or as a career. So
yes, you are. It all worked out.
It did, yeah, thankfully.
Do you have a date for the big day?
Yeah. Oh my God, no, we don't. Because the venue, the wedding venue, right? You go and do the stuff and you look around, you're like, this is lovely. How much is the brochure? Oh, that's in our price range. And then afterwards, they doubled the price on us. And I was like, why did they do that? Is that normal? And it happened in two separate occasions.
Wow.
And I'm here thinking, oh, this fella Cian, now he's got a lot of followers. Obviously, followers translate to money, so he's bound to afford the bigger package. And that's not the case.
No.
Because me and Emily are quite stingy. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to have like a 60-person wedding. I know the last time I was here, I said like 150 or something.
You've cut it already.
Oh, we've cut it. God, oh, we've cut a lot of things out of it. not when I say things, I don't mean people. I just mean like, you know, like a 3-course meal. Like, why pay the extra mile just to eat like a pigeon breast? Like, why? Who eats a pigeon? Would you eat a pigeon breast, Martin?
Oh, fish and chips all the way.
Okay, fine. Okay, that's fine. But like, yeah, I just want to get rid of it all. Maybe just get like a few. You said it to me last time. Just rent a field and just get a few vans and just have some chips.
Do you know where I am now?
Where?
Don't even bother.
Yeah, we actually are thinking that too. It's like you could do the whole world instead
absolutely.
Of just like dancing in a ballroom with all your weird uncles and aunties looking at you.
Exactly. You know? Think about that. And it's changing every time I see it. It changes. So I'd love to see it next time you come in. Martin, talking about going the extra mile, what have you gone the extra mile for?
Oh, is this a question about relationships? Or
no, it doesn't have to be relationships, but is it something that you've just gone the extra mile for? Would it be a job? Would it be a person? Would it be a thing?
Oh, gosh, that's a very big question. Well, actually, while Cian was talking, I was thinking of something that once happened to me, which kind of worked in reverse. So it's a story against myself, and I don't mind telling it. So at the age of 20, I was romantically inexperienced and a bit of a mess. And I suddenly became grossly infatuated with someone studying at the same university as myself. I probably can't tell the story consistently using gender-neutral language, so it happened to be a she. And we probably talked four times briefly, and she probably remembers me, as a, if she does at all, as a slightly awkward guy who approached her on four occasions and made a fool of himself. There's no stalking here. I'm not incriminating myself. But it was appallingly awkward. Anyhow, so this all got very stressful because in my mind, you know, I once overheard her say one word on the stairs, and I spent a week thinking about how wonderful and how we could really talk about this thing together. Yeah, I'm not proud of how I was at 20, and I hope that other people aren't. So anyhow, combined with other stresses like overwork and everything, I went and saw my advisor and said, look, I'm thinking of quitting the discipline and going becoming a butcher. This is just, I can't handle this. And he said, yes, yes, you could do that. Or perhaps you could take a term out and, you know, see if you want to carry on your studies, which is what I ended up doing. And so in the end, it was decided I would go and spend a term at a city abroad. And this was very relaxing because I wasn't studying. I wasn't overworking. I was far away from the source of my romantic torment. Until one day I'm sitting in the internet cafe in this foreign city, and I'm happily writing a letter to my friend saying how great it is and how last night I just had a technicolored dream of a Japanese cartoon. You know, my brain has started working again. I have memory. I can talk. It's fantastic. So there I am. And from the corner of my eye, I have this horrendous hallucination that the object of my desires, now extinguished, has just come into that internet cafe. And I think, I'm having hallucinations. This can't be. I get up and without paying, I walk out through the door and I run. Okay. This city had lots of taxis, which were minibus-like things, and one day I'm sitting in the front seat of the minibus next to the driver, and who should get in but she and her friend, and I see them, and I this isn't true.
Was it a hallucination?
This isn't happening. So, of course, it all makes sense, because what they were doing their study abroad, and the people who advised me where I should go were in the university,
They
knew the cities where students went to do their study abroad. So by a process of convergence, I had ended up going to the same city where were. And the final straw was when, like a week before leaving, I'm walking home and I see her and the friend standing in the street talking to the people who live in my house, and I have to walk past them. And I cringed, and it turned out they live in the same street that I did. So I did my best to do the extra mile and escape from the situation, and it came back and got me.
She followed you, Martin. That's what's happened there. She followed you to that city.
Sounds like a sign.
It does. Lads, that's all we have time for. Thank you so much for being Jen's friends. Keen to me. I'm Martin Worthington from Near and Middle Eastern Studies at TCD. Absolutely gorgeous stuff. Keen, where can people follow you if they want to check out your stuff?
Everywhere, sure. Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, all of them. Mr. Keen to me.
Absolutely. And Martin, I believe you are writing a book.
Well, and I'm going to be telling people about that book, like many of my colleagues in universities across Ireland, at Researchers' Night, which is Friday coming. So tune in for all sorts of wonderful things from everybody else and me.
Okay, and if people want more information on that, is there anything online, or can they follow you, or can they just rock up?
Researchers' Night and Google will get you everywhere.
Okay, Researchers' Night on the L Google will get you there. Ed, lads, thanks for coming in. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9.
On 2FM.